Hello, hello. Good afternoon, Arizona Cardinals fans. Welcome in. It is a Victory Monday here with the Redbird Reboot. Happy to talk to you guys at least about a no longer defeated, now 1-2 Arizona Cardinals team getting that 28-16 upset over the Dallas Cowboys. Something Marcos is very happy for. Always a good day when the Cardinals get a win. Even better day if it's over the Cowboys. Marcos, how are we feeling today with the Cards coming in and kind of shocking the world, I think, in a lot of ways, because most people, I would say almost 99% of people, did not pick Arizona to win this game.
I'm always going to say this is always a great win, especially if it's against the Cowboys. Not that I have a lot of ill will or hate the Cowboys. It's just that this is a big rivalry, especially here in the Valley, because of the fact that we didn't have a team for a while. Lots of people that were born here are Cowboys fans. And of course, being that our stadium seems to be like the visitor stadium every single time, just being able to get that win, listening to the crowd just go wild on passes over the middle, big runs, and like defensive stops, especially with that last beauty by Kaiser White reading that pass and intercepting in the end zone. I mean, what is there not to like?
Yeah, no, the Cardinals came out in the very first play of the day, get the 44-yard run. To me, what stood out a lot was hearing pregame what they talked about. On the sideline report, Paul Calvisi talked and said that the coaches and players all said, hey, like the way that you beat the Cowboys, you got to run the ball effectively. That's especially where you can run at Micah Parsons. That then will keep him out of those pass rushing situations. They also talked about having to be able to have these long drives, keeping the offense off the field. And defensively, it came in terms of stopping the run and being able to be good in situational football. The fact that Arizona came out and was able to get to a 10-0 start from the get-go, that's something we've seen before from the Cardinals. The first half Cardinals have been very well coached so far. It was the first win for Jonathan Gannon. And you could see at least, I think, the players respond really positively to him and to Monty Austinfort, which we'll talk about at least one of those fun post-game things here on the show in a bit. But Marcos, this has probably been as good of a start for a team that's expected to be bad as we could get. We've had a really close loss to the Commanders, a blown second half that seemed like the Cardinals were dominating through the first and then ultimately disappointed. But then to go out and get a win against the Cowboys, it's started to change the narrative some about this team.
Yeah, it's just like I mentioned in the podcast, what was it, like last Thursday with our guest, that like we're not going to be given the benefit. And people don't really pay attention to the Cardinals because we're not really a big market when it comes to like the NFL as a whole. I mean, the Cardinals are just known for being the people that like kind of, you know, fall apart and whatnot. And if they do get to that contender status, sometime they're just going to fall apart. But that's the team we're facing as well. We know that the Cowboys are also on that same tier where you give them that first, like that number one, like on the power rankings, and they're just gonna blow it somehow. And it shouldn't have happened. I mean, looking at this legitimately, they beat the Giants by 40 points. They didn't allow a single score to them. We go up on the Giants and then they come back and beat us, of course. But like common sense would say, like, you know, hey, if the Cowboys defense is this great and the Cowboys offense is operating at this efficiency, the Cardinals shouldn't have a chance, at least. And I thought to myself, it's going to be close. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. We're going to get close and then maybe towards the end. But I'm glad they proved me wrong. So thank you, Cardinals, for doing that.
Yeah, no, that was essentially the feeling going into the third quarter. You have the Arizona Cardinals they go into the half and they're pretty much in the lead, but it's not like it's basically a blowout type of a game. You're talking about a 10-0 start that then turns into Dallas catching up. Dallas was able to make a lot of plays through the air. When you're at least looking at it, it was 21-10. That's a two-score game. Dallas went down, got a field goal. They forced a punt by the Cardinals where it was just, it was brutal because you had Rondale Moore took a handoff, was tackled, I think, at least after 2 yards. James Conner just gets tackled in the backfield. Another false start penalty on 3rd and 8, pushes them back to 3rd and 13. They basically just handed off to Amari DiMercato. You felt like, oh gosh, this is just the Giants game all over again. This is the Commanders game with the false starts all over again. You even see the Cowboys return it for 51 yards as far as basically getting a giant kickoff return. You're like thinking to yourself, all right, this is it. Like, they're about to give up a touchdown. The Cowboys are going to go for two. They're going to get it. It's going to be a tie game. We're not even into the fourth quarter yet. Cowboys are going to start to run away with this. Instead, the Cowboys, they get a penalty on the play. They still drive down into Cardinals territory. Cards get the stop on 4th and 3. They get some pressure on Dak Prescott. And Arizona is able to hold them a second time with a field goal. The offense, at least, does not pick it up on that second drive. They punt again. Biggest thing, the question was, are the Cardinals going to learn? They do at the very end of the game, where you see that they go aggressively with that big pass to Michael Wilson. He ends up picking up about 69 yards on the play. Arizona capitalizes by heading it off, payoff with a touchdown to Marquise Brown for 2 yards. They now have a 28-16 lead, and they pick off Dak Prescott on the last drive to effectively end the game. Great win for the Cards, because it wasn't just that they were able to go and get the win. It was that they had the advantage, and even though they had some setbacks, they didn't blow it at the end. And rather, it was Dallas who really blew it with that key interception to end the game in the Clough situation, where I think it was 3 out of 4 times they were in the red zone. They only ended up scoring 1 touchdown on those 4 trips. They kicked a field goal and had, I believe, 2 failed 4th down conversions the other 2 times. Really, the Cardinals' defense was probably the most impressive thing in this game, I think, in the fourth quarter, whereas the Cardinals' rushing attack is something that we'll show some video on that. I think people have been stunned with how good of a rushing team they've turned into, and maybe we shouldn't have been that stunned that they went out and traded for an athletic quarterback in Josh Dobbs.
I mean, he's also proven me wrong. So thank you to Josh Dobbs for showing that you can actually like operate this offense, make the key throws when you need to. That was a beauty of a read to Michael Wilson, and big ups to Michael Wilson. I'm really excited about that rookie. But all in all, that like this type of rushing attack. Now, I'm going to clarify some things about what I said about Kyler Murray, and it has to mostly do with like the ability to have to change his game from turning his back to the defense and making sure you hit that, you know, that not that seam route, but basically that inward slant or maybe the dig route over the middle. But like, can you imagine? Yes, I will say this. Can you imagine with the rushing attack, that beauty by Josh Dobbs on that QB keep, what the option reading Micah Parsons and taking his aggression and making him pay for that to turn it into what was essentially what, like a 40 yard run. I'm really not sure, but he was off to the races, and that's how you read a defender. He's the read guy. He's the unblock man. You either hand it off if he's going to try to contain. If he's going to bite inside, then you obviously keep it. But he came towards him, and without any fear, read him, went right past him, and that's it. Like, Micah Parsons is now, he's out of the play. So that was beautiful. I love to see how these things are working like cohesively now, and it took a few games to do that, but that gives us like at least an idea and a picture. And so when Kyler Murray does come back, aside from what he needs to, you know, build from with those live reps and whatnot, at the very least rushing wise, if his knee's holding up, this is going to be a great rushing team. I think they got a good thing going.
Yeah, no, the rushing attack has been really good. Something I think that stands out also to me was through the first quarter, it seemed like the Cardinals were kind of catching the Cowboys a bit off guard with their rushing attack. You would see a couple big plays from James Conner. Obviously, we talk about the running that was going on. The ability to put Rondale Moore in as a running back and for him to score from like 40 yards out was a little bit of trickery, but it's also a place of using a player properly, because we talked, I think, all last year about how the Arizona Cardinals are going to run the all 5'9 offense. Like we saw previously, they drafted Rondale. It's like you got Kyler at 5'9, you got Chase Edmonds at 5'9, you got Rondale Moore at 5'9. You could put all 3 guys back there, and any of them, if you mix it up, could probably gain 40 yards running. You could then use Rondale almost like this wide receiver slash running back. We really never ended up seeing how I think we wanted to have that be in the Cardinals. They really just ran the ball with James Conner, with Cliff, and they did swing passes, like the small, quick, short passes to Rondale out of the backfield, where there was just a lot of tackles for no gain. We've seen them pushing him downfield more, but in this case, we also got to see just some of the explosiveness the last few weeks that Rondale has had, and I think it's something that probably shows that this coaching staff is able to adapt and do things a bit better than perhaps the old coaching staff was for one way or another. Steve Keim would draft players, I think, that were trying to fit a mold with Cliff Kingsbury, and if it didn't quite fit that skill set, they would sometimes struggle to utilize them. It feels like this Cardinals staff has been a lot better at being able to adapt and putting players into some of those roles. What do you think, Marco?
Well, I agree. In some certain aspects, you can still kind of see that same usage. You're still seeing Rondale Moore do the whole screen and jets like the jet sweeps and whatnot. But obviously, if anybody's going to do that, it will be Rondale. But I do like the utilization of him being lined up right next to the quarterback, like a halfback, taking the handoff and take. That's what he's capable of. He's built like a running back. So that was one of the key things that I thought to myself, if you're going to get creative and start doing that, where the old regime wouldn't do that, then go for it. I mean, that's what, you know, great teams do. Remember when we saw the Patriots utilize, I forgot what his name was, but he played for Atlanta as well. He was a kick returner. He was also
Cordarrelle Patterson. Like, he played for years and years as a wide receiver. And then one year, like, hey, look, he's a running back that you can throw the ball to. And what happens? He has a huge season for the Atlanta Falcons, ends up being part of that rushing attack last year with Tyler Allgeier. And now we've seen him still be used like that in Atlanta as part of this three-headed monster.
Absolutely. And the seeds were planted from when he was with the Patriots, and Atlanta just saw what was working with them. And they said, you know what, let's go ahead and utilize him just that way. And they made him into like what is an all-around type of superstar. So we seeing that and seeing that experiment where they're going to be like, what if we use Rondale Moore more in the backfield on orbit motions? Like he had a couple orbit motions around the quarterback where they basically were trying to get the defense to show their hand, making him jet sweep and then going wrapping around the quarterback, going to that same side, giving it to him on that side. That gives him more space to be able to operate. If the cornerback follows, then he's stuck in all that traffic when the ball gets snapped. If the corner doesn't follow, then you know you're in zone. Then that gives you like somewhat of a tell. So all this creativeness and Cliff did do it, but he did it with Andy Isabella. But Andy Isabella was, I don't know if he was coached to do this or I don't know if he just thought this would be cool, but he would just orbit motion and try to like juke somebody from behind the line of scrimmage, which pretty much didn't do anything because the defender would just stay there and eyes on him. But with Rondale Moore, I love what they're doing with this. And I agree that if you see some strength, then experiment, do it. I mean, what's the worst that can happen?
They tried doing stuff with jet sweeps with Andy. They tried doing stuff like that with Rondale. I think a lot of what we've seen, though, is that a lot of the usage has been far more trying to run to set up the pass, whereas we're seeing that they're actually taking on a good rushing attack. Right now, at least, I think through, I'll take a look at the individual nature, but we've seen at least through the first few weeks, like with week one, you look at Josh Dobbs, at least, he didn't really run a whole lot. He actually had a really low rushing grade. But when they started throwing in a bit more designed runs, he ended up grading out in the 90s against the New York Giants. And then this last week, he graded out, I believe, at least again in the 90s for the game against the Cowboys, which one of the biggest changes I think that I saw also in terms of this coaching staff and adapting, we saw the worst player, at least for the Cardinals last week, was left guard Elijah Wilkinson, had the two false starts late in the game. He did start the game for the Cardinals, did not finish the game. Tristan Colon, who they actually picked up, plugged in at left guard somewhere in the first and second quarter. They rotated a little bit. Maybe there was injury. We'll find out a bit more with the press conference today with Coach Gannon. But they ended up putting him in. He was a big boost, not just to being able to help in pass protection, which is something Wilkinson struggled with, but in being able to run block as well. I think we've really seen this identity that Jonathan Gannon's been able to put forth, and we've seen it pay off in a lot of ways where there were maybe some questions fans had about Drew Petzing's scheme to begin with. Now it looks like that Drew Petzing has been able to kind of outcoach a probable future or former even defensive coordinator in Dan Quinn, taking advantage and just being able to put together a solid game plan and execute it. There's a lot of hype that I think that some fans had for this coaching staff, Marcos. We heard stuff during the preseason, during training camp, good things. But the national perspective was very much like Cardinals are going to be a laughingstock. Look at this thing that Jonathan Gannon said doesn't make sense. They've got all these first-time coaches. It feels like they're starting to flip the narrative nationally in some ways, I think, with Cardinals fans. While in the meantime, all you're hearing on ESPN is, all right, what did the Cowboys do to screw this up? What did, you know, the Cowboys fail in terms of the fourth quarter? Is Dak not the guy? Like, can the Cardinals get at least a little bit of credit here?
I mean, we've been trying to do that for like so many years already, and it's just not gonna, it's just not really gonna happen until the Cardinals show how serious they are, that they can make deep playoff runs, and this coaching staff, not only that, this front office also can just stop getting in the headlines for the wrong reasons. Just get out of your own, stop getting in your own way. Like, let yourself be the franchise that this community deserves finally, because it gets tiring to constantly hear the storylines every single year. Oh, the Cardinals are definitely tanking. How does everybody know that they're tanking? When they're not even paying attention to what the front office is doing. Oh, they gave up all these players, and you know that's what they're trying to do. And look how cheesy Jonathan Gannon looks. Like, oh, he's trying to ask people, did you take the bus here? Well, there's context to that, but of course they're not going to care about it. Hey, let's just put this clip up and look. Wow, these guys are just an embarrassment. And it's like, we all know this, and I'm speaking, I think, for everybody in the community. We're tired of that narrative. And finally, they're going to start looking at this as like, they're not as bad as, they're not as bad as everybody's been saying that they are. So like, I'm glad that at least now it's starting to flip. But of course, like you mentioned, the Cowboys are going to be the ones who are going to get all the love. They lost this game. Apparently, we didn't win it.
Yeah, no, that's always been the case. And the Cardinals, like, I think I sent this out, and this is an ESPN Stats and Info, too. Cards have won 8 of the last 9 games against the Dallas Cowboys. And the Cardinals have won 6 of the last 7 games since 2008. So you're talking about that Super Bowl year forever ago. Except for one game, which I believe was the 2017 when they didn't have Carson Palmer. I think it was the Blaine Gabbert or Drew Stanton show. Britton Golden, I believe, was on, I think he was actually on the Cowboys that year, unless I'm mistaken, because if he'd moved from the Cardinals to the Cowboys, either the practice squad or active roster. That was like the last time that the Cowboys got a win. Even when they play backup quarterbacks, that's something that the Cardinals have still been able to win over the Cowboys. So it's just another year, I think, where people were just expecting, hey, this year Cowboys are looking in the Super Bowl. We discredit that, sure, they had injuries. 3 of their 5 offensive linemen didn't start the game. That does not explain how Cardinals got a 44-yard run from the first play of the game. That's something that you have to credit them for. It also does not ignore the fact that, or does not affirm the fact, I should say, that they were able to throw the ball in Arizona secondary. They targeted Ketrell Clark again and again. He was able to make some pass breakups. Other times he was getting a bit physical. They were able to kind of drive down and get into the red zone. They just weren't able to convert. And on those 4th and 3s, if you thought Arizona was tanking, then they would just like say, oh, here you go, take it on 4th and 3. You guys are going to get it. Instead, no, they got those stops. They forced field goals. They kind of did everything you're expecting a competitive team to do. And I think that's part of where they've put in that work. We've been able to see it. It's just people, I think, in a national perspective, have really thought that this team has just been kind of like there. And I felt like it was my thing. Cowboys fans, I got good news for you. You're saying that the Cardinals are actively tanking. You lost to a team that's actively tanking. Good news. They're not actively tanking. Bad news. You still lost the football game.
Exactly. But, you know, like, what's going to be interesting is seeing, like, what the narrative is going to be going forth about this. Because if you're tanking, then you wouldn't have tried to win this game. You would have definitely have tried to, like, at least let them back in the game. But they weren't. So how are people going to look at this team now and think to themselves, well, maybe they aren't all in on the Caleb Williams. Like, I mean, we saw the picture, of course, Monty being at Caleb Williams, you know, like, like right there scouting him, you know, like, but we're going to see how this, only time will tell where this Cardinals team is going to go and what direction. If they're good enough, why would we want to tank? If we have some building blocks here, why would we want to do that to begin with? If we have something working out, we want to try to build from that, like the foundation we keep talking about. We see the foundation now. We have to build it from the bottom up, put the studs in, put all the, you know, the wood frame and everything. And building that up is way better than having to like just say, you know what, we're completely garbage. We're just going to tank because, you know, Caleb Williams is a generational talent that's going to come along probably once every like 3 or 4 years or whatnot. But I'd rather just, like I said this at the beginning, that if we do tank, I wouldn't be mad about, like, you know, having to get Caleb Williams at number one overall. But I honestly, the Cardinal, like, pride that I have within myself, I don't want to see them lose. And if they continue to win and we can build from this, and if Kyler Murray is serious about how he's been handling everything and he wants to take that next step, this is only going to get better for us. So I'm excited going forth.
Yeah, I was there at least at the ASU-USC game. It was kind of mixed reviews for some people. I said it was hilarious because ASU fans were looking like, this is the guy who's the Heisman winner. Like, we're able to kind of pull up. We got a 7-7 tie. Like, we're kind of moving back and forth. They eventually end up winning the game, putting up just absurd number on the scoreboard. Even though it didn't feel like that, there were some really big, deep shots that he completed. There was a couple of turnovers. ASU was able to get to kind of stay in the game, and they just ran all over a bad USC defense. But it was funny because it reminded of how, when you look at Justin Herbert, he came into Sun Devil Stadium twice, and he lost both games, only put up like 10 points and looked bad. And so I think I personally looked at that and went, oh, Herbert's going to do nothing in the NFL. And then he goes out and breaks like a Peyton Manning, Baker Mayfield's 28 touchdown record as a rookie and has looked every part of a franchise QB. You're like, oh, okay, so like there is players that matter. There's teams that can matter for each of those elements too. But when it comes to the tanking talk, like we've said this last 2 weeks, Cardinals do not look like the worst team in the NFL. And the Houston Texans don't look like it either. Texans do win against the Jaguars. They get the upset on Sunday. It shows that there is a lot of parity in the league. The teams that essentially have looked the worst thus far have been the Chicago Bears, losing 3 in a row, looking like a mess. And the Denver Broncos, who have Russell Wilson in tow and Sean Payton, they get 70 points put up on them, at least for the most part. And I think it's a good, interesting sign of how far the Cardinals have been because, you know, not to like kind of say it's bygones are bygones, but Vance Joseph is the defensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos. The Cardinals did interview him for their head coach position in this offseason. And I think as a leader of men, there's a lot of respect that I think players, especially Buda Baker, can have for Vance. But we've been able to see with what this Cardinals team has done with a less talented defense, they've gotten more out of a lot of players here than we saw last year that Vance was having with J.J. Watt, with having Byron Murphy when he was even healthy. They were a good defense to start, but after the first lucky game against the Raiders and then that second game against a really bad Panthers team that ended up firing just about all the coaches that were there, they've at least looked like they've been much better. I think that gives a lot of optimism for people in the future with this Cardinals team because rather than it being, hey, we're having to go with Cliff Kingsbury and Vance Joseph, now you feel like that the young coaches here are already a step ahead of those guys and you're hoping that they'll get better as time moves on.
Don't get me started on Vance Joseph. When you see Patrick Surtain getting beat by Chosen, like, he was on a practice squad, and you have your best defender, and this is, I listened to Brandon Perna, he's a big Denver Broncos fan, he brought that up, and he said, like, that was the lowest point. How do you take Patrick Surtain and have him beat by a guy who changed his name, that couldn't even get any, like, any movement here with Arizona, even though he
didn't do anything here, yeah.
No, he was supposed to be the perfect prototypical deep guy for like our offense, and there was nothing there. And so like he's playing for Miami and you see essentially Chosen just like kind of taunt Patrick Surtain by it was the lowest point of their career. I mean, there's no excuses. Denver was a top 10 defense last year. They didn't lose too many pieces on that defense, and at least they had their core pieces, and maybe you could say today was just a fluke. Maybe Miami's offense is just that insane. But they gave up 35 points last week to the Commies, who lost to the Bills and in embarrassing fashion, 9 sacks and 4 turnovers on the Commies and stuff. And now this week they face off Like, I mean, last week they faced off against the Vance Joseph-led defense and the Denver Broncos, who had to put up 31 points or 33 points and still couldn't win the game. That was classic, like last year, where we had to try to outscore their offense, and somehow the defense just slipped by when it came to like criticism. And I kept mentioning, hey, this scheme gives up too many yards underneath. There's a big wide gap, especially on third downs, that are just wide open because of the way that he keeps his corners off ball and his linebackers are just taught to read and run up the pole on Tampa too. So there's nobody vacating that middle zone, which gives up contain. So now this is happening, and I'm not even sure if he's fired yet, but the noise is getting pretty loud, especially since, you know, we wanted Sean Payton as well. Look how well that's turning out. It's wow. It's just an embarrassment.
Yeah, no, and the Broncos even added pieces in the offseason. It wasn't like that they added a, you know, obviously it's harder to go up from the bottom, but they added Sean Payton as a play caller. They added someone at right tackle and at left guard with Ben Powers. The offense at least looks like it's much improved. Like Russell Wilson through the first 2 weeks, you're like, oh, this doesn't look that great. And that week, give them credit, they at least were able to have an effective passing game. But on defense, they were essentially just a sieve. And one of the things that we've said, and this is even funny, is like they added Zach Allen. Like the Cardinals didn't have Zach Allen last year, along with J.J. Watt playing at a high level. And they did better against the run this year than they did previously. And that's crazy to think about. I think it just shows that where the Vance Joseph, it was probably the best that Steve Keim was able to get. And even though his defense improved as they added talent, there were still limits. When I look back and watch the film just of the, not to spend too much time on the, oh gosh, there's probably gonna be people doing breakdowns of that over and over again on the Miami-Denver game. But just to look at it, it looked like every time that a player went in motion, we've talked about how the Cardinals last year did not do a lot of pre-snap motion. You would get to the line, almost take like that snapshot of the defense that you would have with the air raid quarterback and then being able to make the changes like afterwards. No, they would move a guy around and all of a sudden you would see someone from Vance Joseph's defense playing man would follow that guy. And then all of a sudden, wherever that player had just been, they would throw or run right to that area. So it's like, hey, we're just going to run a guy in motion over here. Someone follows him. We go to where he used to be. Hey, someone's going to run here. We'll go in motion, throw to where they weren't. So it's just an entire half of just manipulating his man coverage scheme. And of course, you know, guys are going to make adjustments. So what did he do second half? Played more of that soft zone defense, more of the shell defense. And what have we seen be a problem with that over time with the Cardinals, Marcos? A lot of the hook routes and a lot of the over-the-middle stuff would just be open in the middle of the field. You would have linebackers being a little too close to the line of scrimmage, so they would just run players behind it. Or like you mentioned in the long touchdown pass, eventually the safeties that they had in the game were having to come up and make tackles because the way that Vance would do his defense, safeties were super important. I don't want to discount like Justin Simmons, fantastic safety. He did not play against the Dolphins. We saw Vance's defenses really, really struggle without Budda Baker. And I think we're kind of seeing now with Budda and Jalen probably made up for a lot of stuff for that Cardinals team, because when they added Jalen and you had Budda next to him, all of a sudden that 2019 defense got a lot better in 2020. It got a lot better. It got bad at the end of 2021 when Jalen got hurt. And through 2022, it wasn't too bad up front, but until then, it started to end the season. They just got run over by everybody. It really feels ultimately like the Cardinals were in a place for a number of years where Vance Joseph just was not probably the defensive coordinator that was able to get them to the next level. And now we're seeing in Denver, people already talking about like saying, hey, like, I know you never fire a guy midseason, but like he may have to go tonight. It's kind of crazy as a Cardinals fan to see it from the outside, especially with Sean Payton, who like Cardinals fans, including myself, wanted this offseason.
Exactly. Hey, Blake, do you think Vance Joseph is having the time of his life?
Oh, no. I think that he's up there in Denver. Like, people are probably, like, thinking he's getting revenge on them or something like that after he had a bad failed head coach experience before. He's now going up there back to being under with Sean Payton, and he's going to get a lot of blame for what's honestly not been a great team there, especially considering the defense was so strong last year. He's, it just feels like you're looking at kind of a spot where the Cardinals are moving forward. The Denver Broncos, they're supposed to also be moving forward. Instead, they've seemed to move backwards overall with Vance Joseph being there.
I think it's pretty clear who the worst team in the league is, and it's definitely not the Cardinals. It would be interesting to see what the Carolina Panthers defense, which has a lot of young pieces, and they're very excited, you know, defense who are now being, coordinated by Ejiro Evero, which I have a lot of respect for. And he made that Denver defense into like a top 10 defense, even after, the great Vic Fangio left that defense a couple of years ago when he wasn't no longer the head coach. So it would be very interesting, but like not to bash too much, like not to beat up a dead horse too much. But I mean, it kind of shows you how the Cardinals, like when it comes to like how we kind of like how our front office like processes like information and whatnot. They gave Vance Joseph an interview, and there's talks, and I'm not sure if this is clear, but it almost seemed like every person who was getting interviewed for a head coaching job here, one of the stipulations was you have to keep Vance Joseph as your defensive coordinator. So now we know for sure if Sean Payton was the guy, Vance Joseph would have continued to have been the defensive coordinator. It's obvious because, of course, like he's the defensive coordinator for the Broncos. So are we happy now with the path now going three games in to see where this is going? And you saw Sean Payton after the interview. I didn't like the way he handled like the media after that. Can you imagine that here? Like, that's unprofessional.
Yeah, it was a place where, and this is partially because that's what happens when you win or when you lose. Like, that's part of it. But like you said, the original kind of selling point that people had for Sean Payton was that he said he was going to come back and he was going to bring Vic Fangio with him as his defensive coordinator. The Vic Fangio who is with the Dolphins and was on the other side of the football, held the Broncos to 20 points or less, was able to force at least, like, I think it was at least two turnovers, if not three turnovers from the Broncos, which is part of why they ran up the score. Just like they just had a bunch of second half turnovers. They took over, were able to score. That was something at least where I think what advertises Sean Payton, the idea of, hey, it seems like this can work. He can work with a shorter quarterback in Kyler Murray. You can bring in Vic Fangio, start running that defensive front, re-sign some of your talent that you have. And instead it turned into what looks like a full rebuild where Arizona, all of a sudden people are telling you they're going to go 0-17, things are going to be bad. Look at least how badly the Super Bowl went for Jonathan Gannon. And really, Sean Payton, what he kind of ended up selling in a lot of ways, ultimately what we thought was going to be a really good model, it ended up being, you know, held back some by Vance Joseph. And we've ultimately seen that maybe he could do some work. At least he's helped Russell Wilson out a lot. But you get more excited about how these Cardinals have used Josh Dobbs as far as being able to use him, his legs, and that run game, kind of taking some pressure off of the quarterback in Dobbs while also letting him use his legs. That was something I think that we saw from the very first play, and I can pull that up here at least to take a quick look at that, just what the Arizona Cardinals did. And this is from SB Nation, and Mark Schofield did a little quick a recap at least of just how creative this Cardinals staff was in the run game to be able to take a look at that very first play of the day. So you have first play, first down. You got two guys to the right. You got your tight end on the line, at least. You got that read option carry in the backfield. Whoop! There he goes. He's just gone, running down the sideline. A bad angle gets taken there by six. He ends up finally tackled him down here. But the first thing that I think of here is they said, how do you stop Micah Parsons? They said the answer is you run the football, especially run it at him. So they go at least, and they said this is essentially a GT counter is what the play is. Well, counter, you take your guard, you take your tackle, move them from one side to the other. That's usually what just counter. That's like the basis of Oklahoma Lincoln Riley offense, basis of a lot of USC offense, basis of the Cleveland Browns offense. What's different about this play here is it's a counter read. So what happens is he's reading Micah Parsons, crashing down on the running back. You got your tight end blocking over here, at least with Jeff Swaim. You got Zach Ertz over there. You can see at least that they're all looking at James Conner, expecting James Conner to get the handoff and expecting him to run to the right. Josh Dobbs, he sees Micah Parsons there, and they bait him into going after the running back. And suddenly, whoop, he runs right where Micah Parsons was outside, and it fools everyone on the Dallas Cowboys sideline. That just was the play that essentially showed Arizona looked at the Cowboys. They made a game plan. And they were able to essentially out-coach in this way the Cowboys from the very get-go.
I mean, that's just a thing of beauty, especially with how they put James Conner on the left side of the quarterback, of course, and then they pulled the guard and the tackle, just like you mentioned, you know, on the counter play to the opposite side of the field just to try to sell the run. And because of the fact that, like, you know, that looks just basic, like a shotgun run to the right side of the field, which is, I would assume that's the field side. Yeah. So he runs towards the boundary, reading Micah Parsons, keeps the ball, yep, punishes his own aggression, and now he's gone. So that's a beauty right there. And like you literally broke it down like perfectly. So big ups to you, Blake.
Well, Mark did a good job too in his article, which again, like I first thought this is a zone read. I had to rewatch it from this angle to recognize it was actually counter. And like you said, they're letting Micah Parsons get right past as far as the tackle, which normally in counter, you let the big pass rusher get past because you're not going to be going with the ball anywhere near him. Like DJ Humphries is blocking the other guy. You now get two blocks onto this defender here. You got this guy pulling at least over here to kind of clear a lane. So that's what the whole idea behind counter is you can be very effective if you got a guy like, say, Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa, even here with Micah Parsons, you can be very effective at running away from a guy who's being disruptive. The difference here is, like you said, this is a case where he needs to be able to keep his eyes on the quarterback to make sure that it's not going to be the quarterback keeping it for a read. He doesn't do that. He's just, I can make this big play, this big tackle for loss. He just goes right after, thinks he's got an open lane to James Conner, and the last second, Josh Dobbs is able to pull it out. You can see right here where the defender, who they did a good job ultimately of getting him out of the play. He's basically, as the linebacker is looking, expecting that he's going to be able to kind of break free from that guy, get that tackle at least on James Conner. Instead, he realizes suddenly, oh, they've fooled all of us. They're running it to the other side. He gets chipped at least just enough by number 65 there, Wilkinson. And Wilkinson did get taken out in the play, but he at least plays this well enough where he's kind of able to sell the idea of, hey, we're going to be selling the counter. Instead, always was designed for Josh Dobbs to keep it where, hey, if you see Micah Parsons go after you, he's not gonna, because they at least had coached it up, you're gonna pull that ball and run it. If he does go after you, instead of the running back, just hand that ball off to James Conner, let him be able to run up. We've got enough of a chip that's in place where we can at least pick up a few yards. Just a great job ultimately by the Cardinals. It set the tone for the rest of the game. I thought that was a really fun play to be able to break down as far as creativity with the backup quarterback, or I should say now they're starting quarterback, but typically backup in Josh Dobbs.
Yeah, so in that instance, there's two things that Micah Parsons should have been coached to do. And funny enough, Isaiah Simmons actually was pretty good at being able to do this. He did this enough in college when they put him as the read guy. So it's called a squeeze and pop technique. You're basically, if you have the hips for it or like the legs for it, and you're able to unlock your hips, you're able to pull off this technique. Otherwise, what you're supposed to do is just kind of square up, just watch what the quarterback's doing. So obviously he thought run. It's running to the field side. So he didn't even bother trying to read what the quarterback was going to do. Maybe he just didn't expect it because they didn't think Josh Dobbs was a running quarterback. So instead of squaring up to make sure he can contain that quarterback, he went too aggressive and tried to stop the run by doing some chase down tackle from behind, maybe for a loss and stuff. So that got to him. But it, with an athlete like that, you do teach the squeeze and pop technique because you're trying to manipulate the quarterback. So what you essentially do is you run, like if you're going towards, like you're crashing inside, you unlock your hips. You have to be set to do this from the beginning. You can't just do this mid like play. You have to already be set on doing it. That's the reason why I was confused why they didn't coach him to do this. So when you're crashing down, you unlock your hips towards the outside because the quarterback's already reading you and saying, oh, he's going to crash inside. Oh, yep, he isn't. And now I have the ball, because that decision has to be made in a split second. So, oh, what do I do now? Oh, well, he's coming after. Okay, that's a lost play. So I'm not sure if they're going to teach him more of that, especially with running. I mean, maybe he does do that when it comes to like a quarterback that can run the ball. Maybe he just wasn't expecting that, but I mean, great catch on like making sure that you punish his aggressiveness, and that's exactly what happened. And you saw the look. He's kind of confused at the end, and Josh Dobbs is already off to the races.
Yeah, it's fun because we've seen the Cardinals be able to do great game plans before. Like a great example I think of a couple years ago with Cliff, and this is the most that I think that they've scored, if I can remember correctly. Last week it was the most they'd scored in the first half. since the Cleveland Browns game, where Kliff actually wasn't the play caller and their offense was just churning. They were able to bait the safety on when Kyler Murray would scramble and kind of roll to the left. The safety would drop down because Kyler would often take off and run forward. Well, this time instead, what happened was Christian Kirk was going up for a route. He curved to the outside and Kyler went and threw the ball to him. So instead of having that safety over the top, you bit on a defense's tendency, game plan for it, and were able to make an adjustment to it. That's something I think that was fun. The other thing that's cool is you're also seeing some talent pop up. We'll talk a little bit here with Monty Asenfort and some of what he's doing, but there's a fun clip that we can at least show real quick, just where Arizona did a little bit other of adapting. And this is where you see the rookie Michael Wilson take a little bit of play. Again, this is in Schofield's article, at least, which I'll probably link to in Revenge of the Birds so we can see that one. But you take a look at how this play is set up. It's 3-0. They're able to drive down. They don't get the touchdown. They end up not being able to get it into the end zone. Here you got what looks like two wide receivers. You've got one at least split out over here to, I think it's the field side here with Hollywood, another one there. Got one running back in the backfield. So on this play, you take a look at it and say, it looks like they're going to probably roll with either a handoff that's going to go to the right, a handoff at least where Dobbs would roll out to the right. You got these two guys would be open. You would have a run from James Conner would go to the left, and you got two tight ends that are there that are blocking. Now, what's fun about this play is you want to say who plays the part of the in motion blocking tight end of this play. It's number 14, Michael Wilson. He actually comes across the defense, not quite in a jet sweep, but like a blocking tight end, and he blocks the safety to be able to actually free up James Conner for a large gain down the sideline. So I think this is a great example, at least, of how you're able to, you know, like even in this spot, they've got an extra player over here that's trying to cover Michael Wilson. He gets lost in the scramble. They are not able to see the linebacker right here. He's not able to get back over in time to be able to block. As soon as Wilson goes, boom, he's just reading, looking to see what's going to happen in the backfield. They're looking to watch the quarterback. They're looking to watch where the running back goes. And instead, they don't even get there in time. He just, boom, gets that block in, and James Conner is just gone off the left edge. Great play design here, because people don't realize that Michael Wilson as a blocker, very good, and that's a strength that you can talk about, whereas the Cardinals wide receivers last year just were not as strong of blockers. Just boom, lights the guy up.
Those are the type of plays where I say Ron Wolfley would get excited about that, because in that play, of course, he's being pulled as the fullback, as the lead back, basically, right, in that type of play design. Because as the new era of the NFL starts to adapt again, going back to more, you know, heavier personnel and whatnot, this is a trickery that we see with the Los Angeles Rams when they use Skowronek as like the fullback, as the basically the move like tight end or fullback. So he's a wide receiver that can take on linebackers like he did last year when he popped Zaven Collins and whatnot. Well, this is essentially the same play design. You don't know where the lead blocker is going to come from. So you pull Michael Wilson across the formation, making everybody think maybe he's lined up in the slot about to run a route going over the middle or towards the outside.
Jet sweep possibility, at least, any of that stuff.
Oh, yeah. And then he comes across and he's like, oh, okay. Well, he's running across the formation. The safety has to crash down on trying to, you know, fill in that gap for the run, maybe like try to get the tackle at the line of scrimmage. Here comes Michael Wilson full steam, and he just like catches you off balance. And look at that physicality. It's beautiful. Like, he took him out of the play, and that opened up that wide open lane.
Yep. Violence in football is something Jonathan Gannon talked about. They wanted players, at least, who were going to use some of that. The other thing I wanted to at least say before we move on from this play, at least, is when you look at the replay and the start, you get to actually see them get the linebackers off guard with the little details, which is something. And when you look at how they take the handoff, you've got two tight ends on the left, Michael Wilson on the right. It looks like what they're going to do is almost that same type of counterplay where you've got the other tight ends moving over, or you're going to try to run the ball to the right, and then you've got the tight ends blocking. So you got your cutback lane to the left. This is part of where when you get under center, you got a strong play action game. This is some of the benefit that you can have, that you don't get this out of shotgun. You've got all these guys that are there on the line. You look at the very start, as soon as they snap the ball, the James Conner looks a little bit and turns his body to the right and then runs back to the left. So what they do is they actually pull Dallas's linebackers a bit over to the right. And then when that cutback lane opens, Dallas thinks, oh, they're just going to go right to that cutback lane. But guess what? Michael Wilson is already pulling across that formation, and They get a little bit of, maybe you could say, a hold, I think, in the backside that wasn't called. There's another hold I know that wasn't called on Zaven Collins earlier in this game. Actually, looks like he does let the guy get past and doesn't really restrict him. But great call to be able to actually see here, where you're able to see that they're not able to quite get to him. It's just part of what makes this football design, as far as a great play, is just that little detail of seeing how everyone fakes it to the right and then they run it back to the left. That's something that I think a lot of people, with James Conner taking that quick step, that shows a lot of the dedication that he puts in as a back, where he's just able to sell just enough to go to the right and then boom, back to the left. That this does not look like a tanking team, Marcos. This looks like a team that designed this play because they want to get yards and to be able to make it work. That's something that I think Cardinals fans, what we've been kind of saying the past few weeks, what other Cardinals fans have been saying, I think people are now finally starting to accept that this Cardinals team isn't maybe going to win a lot of games. We don't know what the next few weeks of the schedule look like, but we do know that they're going to be working hard to compete.
And it's only going to build like more trust when it comes to like Kyler Murray wanting to be a part of this and taking this essentially very serious. He's had this whole time when rehab just to be able to study the playbook, learn everything on film. And when he takes those live reps, he'll know what to expect, especially with this offense being very like run heavy. So of course, that's just going to help with the read options because of his legs. Of course, we don't know how that's going to, you know, turn out with his knee. Like, we won't know what the actual mental state Kyler Murray will be when it comes to like planting like his leg, especially making those cuts. But at the very least, you know, we saw him run that shotgun offense, like with the read option, where he'd have a running back to either side of his of the formation, where he's either handing it off, reading the read guy at the edge who's going to come on block, and you know, being able to like run that offense for a while, where like defensive coordinators were getting smart and thinking to themselves, okay, we're not going to make our edge rushers be aggressive. We're going to make him square up, because if he doesn't hand off the ball, that we catch him dead to rights. And that's happened. And no under center action doesn't keep the defense like honest. And just like you mentioned, with James Conner making that subtle move, that put the linebackers, even if it's like not that big of a movement, it put him in a position where they were easily blocked by the guard and the tackle going to the second level.
It put them in that conflict position for just a little bit of time, which allowed them to be able to not get to James Conner right in time.
Yeah, exactly. So when you move them that much and you put them in a prime position where anybody who's pulling, anybody's going to the second level, is able to catch him at a better angle, like if they're shielding off that run lane, well, then that's all you want to do. And making that little movement to fake it going to the right side and then cutting back to the left, that got the, because tackle, yeah, the linebackers bump over. That's what they do. So they bumped over, came down, and they were caught in a bad position.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we have to credit at least with Monty Austin for it with as well. I know this is, he's a new first-time GM. Apparently, like from what everyone said when he was hired, first thing was he's a great guy. One of the things I think that's important to the Cardinals has been building a winning culture. I wanted to show at least this is a clip that was captured, I believe, by Cam Cox after the game of him congratulating every single player that was coming off of the field. And what's really fun is you can see not just the genuine excitement, but just the expressions are like, not only are they funny, but they're authentic in a way where you can see like, he is just very excited that they were able to get him his first win as a general manager. Players are coming off. He's greeting like every single player that come about. Like, he even runs after Kayvon Wallace because he missed him. That's something that I think when you're talking about building a culture and something you want to be a part of, this is a huge part of it. Like, let's not gloss over some of this. We've talked about how there were Cardinals players who talked about snakes in the grass with the previous general manager and other issues that they had. This is at least the sign of starting something here in the desert that I think is super positive that you can build off of. And that is something where I think you credit, you know, a lot of credit goes to Michael as far as he brought in someone like Monty, who then went out, actually tampered with Jonathan Gannon at least, which in 3 weeks looks like it's been a little bit different, I think, than people expected, and ends up being something that so far we're at least seeing the Cardinals be able to start kind of building this culture that even being down, they were able to come back, be able to get a win against the Cowboys, and did it in a way that ultimately made fans really proud, especially considering it's just It was a sea of blue, we heard on Sunday, 75% Cowboys fans. They all had to go home sad. There was unfortunately a fight that I think did take place that I heard about. There were some video taken. It was just a spot where a lot of Cardinals fans, I think you even mentioned seeing some Cowboys fans after the game looking disappointed just for how they expected to blow out this bad Arizona Cardinals team. And instead, you had the Cardinals come into play that day, get away with the win.
Well, I'll go ahead and say that, you know, it is very frustrating when you are like a team that's number one in the power rankings, and then you get this team that like probably in their eyes benefit from like losing the game. Like, don't you guys want to lose the game? And then you have a situation, and I've felt this before when I've gone to games where we're supposed to beat a team and then they beat us and then they are very loud. And I'm like, wait, this is like your Super Bowl. You're not going anywhere. That's exactly what the Cowboys' reaction was. They were saying like, you know, a four-letter word that I can't say about the Cardinals. Oof. And saying things like, why, like, what are you guys going to do? You guys are still going to end up not going to the playoffs. True, we're not. But to us, it does feel, and some people say, like, it feels like you guys just won the Super Bowl. It feels that way, guys. I know we didn't win the Super Bowl. But, like, from taking everything that we've taken all off season, and then now showing what we showed in the first three games, and then getting this win, it means so much to the community because we want to see this build to something. And like Monty Austin for it, I'm not going to be prejudiced against bald people. I have a hard time accepting bald people. Like, you know, Steve Keim has been in, like, we've had to go years and years. And I think to myself, okay, now we got another bald guy as a general manager. I hope he's just not being Steve Keim's 2.0, because, you know, I think of it as in like, well, he's not going to tote the line. But seeing him get genuinely excited, that's just genuine excitement. That's him like being happy because he's happy. We didn't see that with Steve Keim. We're seeing it with Monty Osifor. So good for him. I'm glad that like he's winning over like not only the players, but he's winning over this franchise, this fan base, and he's definitely starting to win me over.
Yeah, no, that's something to see. One of the things I know we can talk about here, and this is just, I think, how we'll, one last play before we'll shift into, like, not just the culture building, but just some of what we've started to see as far as Monty and others with this team and then around the league is how they've used some of their personnel in different and creative ways. So you think about with Cliff Kingsbury, you think about how that offense was used. This is kind of the one big play that was, I'm going to say there's the Marco Wilson clip. We'll talk more about, or I should say the Michael Wilson clip. We'll talk more about that in our later shows. We do more film breakdown, but this was the case where if you look at how this play started off, this was Arizona using a essentially five wide type of personnel. You got three receivers, trips right. You've got Rondale Moore in the backfield. And then you got, you know, over here on the far left is Michael Wilson. Dallas essentially is putting five guys on the line of scrimmage. So you're like, all right, you're going to have trips right. We got one guy for each person. We've got a safety that's shading over on that side. If you're going to try to run the ball, you're probably going to try to run it to that left side. So they've got a linebacker who's over here. If you're going to throw the ball, they've got three guys that are over here. It's second and two. They've got at least someone who's going to be back deep. If you're going to try to get it out quick, they'll see if they can close in. If you're looking at this play, this is a play that probably seems like Dallas has the perfect counter for it. But there's one thing that's not really considered, which is the speed that Rondale Moore has out of the backfield as a running back. Arizona snaps the ball in second and two. You can see that they're basically ready for it to be a run. You can see the linebacker closes. But they actually are able to draw a mismatch. This is a safety who's at least, or I should say a linebacker here, not a defensive lineman. And you get the left guard, Colin, is able to get into that second level. And so that's a mismatch. You'll take a guard on a linebacker just because that's a mismatch. And Rondale is able to get around, he gets upfield, and he just explodes through the middle of the defense. They're not even able to catch him. You can see 55 is just scrambling. There's a bad angle taken here by the safety who's watching Michael Wilson on the outside, thinking he's going to have to get second coverage there. He ends up not realizing how fast Rondale Moore is, and boom. Rondale Moore is just gone up the middle of the field. It's like a 46-yard touchdown. And this is just something that's unique because you're able to use Rondale not just in the way that he has been as kind of this small gadget guy, as like a slot receiver, but this is using him in a different way, something that he did oftentimes at college, of just getting him the ball in his hand, getting him into open space. And I think it was Evan Silva, a fantasy football expert, even said this week, like, he thinks, has said since he was drafted, he thought Rondale Moore's best position was running back, which I'm like, oh, well, I didn't ever think of it like that for the most part, but he did get snaps back there in college, and we talked about the Cardinals using Rondale and Chase Edmonds and like Kyler, like in 2021, it was going to be the all 5'9" guys offense. Like, you get three guys back there, you could hand it off to any one of them, and they could go the distance was the idea. We never really saw that come to fruition. We saw bubble screens. We saw other stuff there. And just to see a great use like this that was able to make use of that second round draft pick in a way that we felt like he'd been underutilized for a big score that put the Cardinals up, that was really fun to be able to watch play out. And it's a great use, I think, of the coaching staff using him and being flexible with the general manager to not just say, no, he's your slot receiver, you got to put him out there. I've really been impressed, at least, with just some of that creativity.
I mean, like we mentioned this off of stream, this is like the Cordell Patterson like type of usage where you knew he has that ability. He has like the ability to run between the tackles and he has a lot of speed. So they didn't even think about it twice. I said, why don't we just use Cordell Patterson in that role? Well, the same thing goes with Rondale Moore. Like, why don't we use Rondale Moore as a halfback when he has the build of a halfback? Very small, very strong legs, fast, twitchy type of player. If you put him in a position where he basically has to read like a gap, like more time than not, I think he'll just explode to that gap and he'll use that speed to be able to get that extra yardage. I mean, I get that like his injuries are what have been holding him back, and playing him heavy snaps in the backfield is just not, it's just gonna like, it's basically just gonna like widen that chance of him getting injured, but it doesn't mean you can't put him back there for like two or three plays a game, or maybe even more than that if he's having success. So like, this is great creativity.
Yeah, gosh, like you could, he's also a wide receiver. Like, you could run wide receiver routes with him out of the backfield, and you could put him down into the slot and five wide if you feel like, hey, look, we've got Rondale in the backfield. They've got a linebacker matchup, and guess what? He can beat that guy. There is some creativity, I think, that we've yet to see with how they can use some of the different personnel and formation, and this was kind of eye-opening, I think, just to be able to recognize that, yeah, this is a Cardinals team that is probably going to be a bit more flexible in how they approach it. And it's not necessarily even that we're going to try to basically use the run to set up the pass. This is a place where we're able to actually just run the ball, get a huge score, and be able to see an explosive play. And it's that Jonathan Gannon that shots explosives. Like, this is a great example of it that we got to see with the Cards. And I wanted us to at least, we can talk a bit about this too, but this week we talked about how Vance Joseph, like, returning to the Cardinals was something that was there. I think we want to talk also a little bit about what we're seeing from the Cardinals and how it's a bit different than where things were before. We talked, obviously, about Isaiah Simmons being misused a lot by the Cardinals. One of the things I think that we can say with using Rondale Moore in this new way, the Cardinals previously, I think, had a great opportunity in what they had with Hassan Reddick to essentially kind of have that move that you could make of finding that next guy, that next man up through the draft. Something that Steve Keim, I think we see back in 2021, he went out and they said, hey, Hassan Reddick, he gets 12 sacks. We don't think he can do that again. You finally moved him into a pass rushing role, finally into an edge role. And he was also good in coverage. Like, he had athleticism to keep up with guys. He had practice. They don't re-sign him. I think that if you, and we talked about this a bit off air too, the move that you probably should have made was add him on like a 2-year deal, be able to kind of keep him around. He can replace Chandler Jones in a year. And instead we see the Cardinals just say, hey, we're going to just let you walk. We don't want to pay you. They pay Marcus Golden a little bit less. And then they try to go out and get him again this past offseason. They're like, we'll pay you $12 million. Come on back to us, $12 million a year for like a 4-year deal. Eagles and Jonathan Gannon pay him $16 million. They take Reddick, put him into a place where he gets even more sacks on the number one, I think it was number one pass rushing defense of the Eagles. I think that just says a lot about how Cardinals were looking at Steve Keim. They had Hassan Reddick out of place for a number of years in this Vance Joseph setup, trying to make it work at inside linebacker. You move to a Jonathan Gannon who puts him into the best spot to be able to succeed. I think that it just says a lot about where the Cardinals are now, that they actually are moving forward versus whereas we could see with the old regime, there are just issues that I think they had of locking guys into different roles. And that's something I think it's been a positive that we've seen for the Gannon and Austin Fort regime is they've been able to do this all with having Kyler Murray be injured while having Buda Baker out in the injured reserve. They lost Zaven Collins partway through the game. There was a penalty that wasn't called where I think he left with an eye injury, just got hands to the face, hands into his eye. The Cowboys were able to make plays in the second half, running kind of right where Zaven had been, and the Cardinals were still able to overcome it. I think that just says a tremendous amount of not just respect, but there's credit that's due to this Cardinals team that we haven't really seen nationally. Maybe we'll start to see more of it now, but that was the biggest takeaway I think that I had too, was how far the Cardinals have come from where they were even just last year with Cliff Kingsbury and Vance Joseph.
I mean, that's the biggest oof when it comes to like what you could have had with Hassan Reddick when he is playing. He was playing for the defensive coordinator, who is our head coach now. So can you imagine him in this type of defense? Like, it would have just solved so many issues. It would have solved a lot of issues for Vance Joseph's defense, especially because you mentioned, like, he can cover. He can also rush the passer. And we knew that he was the perfect Sam role. And in this type of defense where, like, basically Vance Joseph would have one linebacker on one side of the field, be that dedicated, like, person just – he has to man up on a tight end in coverage, especially if he's lining across from him. So he's not rushing the pass in that situation. Well, it's when you have him essentially be Marcus Golden or even Devon Kennard, who they elected to keep as well.
Chandler Jones,
and seeing him in coverage is just, it's atrocious. So everything aside, that what's going on with the Denver Broncos, those moves were kind of, I think it was just like cost saving type of moves where they thought to themselves and they said, you know what? We don't have to pay that premium for a player that we kind of burnt a bridge with. So we burnt the bridge because not only had he been misutilized, he was ostracized by the community. And also we didn't pick up his fifth year option. And we were trying to shop him in the 2020 draft. Nobody came through, of course. But we kept them and we just said, you know what? Nobody wants them, so we're going to keep them. At least there's some kind of credit you can give to that by not trying to get rid of them in that moment. But you did keep them. But after you saw what he proved, you didn't try to make more than one offer that was more than $6 million that the Carolina Panthers essentially offered Hassan Reddick. It's a slap in the face. So you just, you already burnt that bridge. And if you try to get him back, you weren't going to compete against the Eagles. The Eagles are his hometown. He wasn't. But aside from that, just going forth, I at least can say that players are going to play in positions and they're not going to do the dilly-dally of trying to play 4D chess and say, you know what, this guy can play this position instead. I saw this. No, just simplify it. He can play this role, play him in that role, and be done with it and watch him develop. Because if you try to do more with somebody right off the bat, they won't develop properly. And as we saw with Isaiah Simmons, they kept moving him from position to position, stretching him thin, trying to make him into that all like, hey, he's a multi-tool type of guy. Well, in the NFL, maybe that's not going to work. So maybe just stick him at linebacker, let him learn linebacker, let him learn the keys, let him learn the leverage and everything from the very get-go. And who knows how he would have turned out. He might still be on this team or he might not, but at least we know this front office, we're not even going to go with that. It's simple. He's this, that's what we're going to do with him. If he's not going to tell him that, he's gone.
Yeah. And that's something I think that is going to be good to see for Cardinals fans, as just being able to see what feels like more competent overall staff and having a general manager and coach who seem to be on the same page, which is really, I think, important just for any NFL franchise, because we're looking at the alternative and, you know, people are saying, are the Cardinals, you know, the worst team in the NFL? We've said no. Now we kind of have proof. And one of the things I think we can share is you want to take a look at least at something that looks just awful. It's just this. You've got 5 touchdowns in the second half where you're already winning 35-13. They punted once. There's multiple turnovers. Even at the end of the game, the very final like spot, the Dolphins drove down at least with just a few plays and basically knelt at 4th and 14 to give it over. They could have kicked and had the all-time 73 would have been the all-time scoring record for any NFL team, record 72. And so they declined it, and a lot of people are just looking at that going, gosh, like, they had the chance to set the record, they didn't. So essentially, think of it like there's that mercy rule of like, hey, please stop having mercy, like a mercy rule in football. They basically gave the mercy rule to the Denver Broncos. This is something where we can say the Bears have looked bad, the Broncos have looked bad. For all the people who are looking at this as a bad team, we don't know what's going to happen or where they're going to pick. All we're trying to say is that the narrative that's followed this team through 3 weeks, we're finally starting to see that kind of turn the corner. And who knows what's going to happen? They play the Niners next week. We don't know what the status will be for Joe Burrow. But it gets a lot of Cardinals fans excited, because if Kyler Murray does end up coming back in a bit more of a timely fashion, you're probably going to see this team at least be, like we said, they probably were going to be 3-0 or at least 2-1 if they had Kyler intact. And there's going to be a lot of excitement, I think, the people are going to have, which puts the Cardinals in a win-win situation. Whether you stay, whether you move on, whatever happens, like last year the Cardinals were 2-2. This year they may have a worse record, but still be a better team. We don't know what's going to happen. All we can say, at least, is here are the building blocks this team is working toward, and it's exciting to see that hard work pay off with them beating the Cowboys. That will be it for us here with the Redbird Reboot podcast for today, recapping the game. We'll be back with another film study session on Saturday, where we'll talk at least just through some of the film. Then we'll kick off the audio portion of the podcast. We'll be previewing at least the team as far as looking at what the Niners will be with Marcos. Marcos, if you want to kind of plug yourself for where the viewers and those who are listening in can find your content, feel free to go ahead.
Redbird Reboot, of course, you're gonna get the best out of like the film study and be able to like get it, you know, like play by play and not just being written down. But you can also find my writings in AZ Sports Underground. I have been slacking, I will tell you guys that, and I'm very sorry about that. But also at Pancake Soul on X, not Twitter, but X, I guess.
There you go. Look, gotta love Marcos throwing up the bird there, at least for the most part, at least like a cardinal bird, not the other type of bird, at least. That wouldn't that'd be a little bit different for our viewers. So I'm Blake Murphy 7. This has been the Redbird Reboot. Thanks, guys, for tuning in. It's been Cardinals winning over the Cowboys. That's a recap. It's time to log off.